You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. Today, we are going to talk about how to leverage the political environment to protect your investment. Today's guest is Lucas Miller. And Lucas was actually a guest of ours, I think back in episode like 10, 11, or 12, where he talked about his house hack in Inglewood, Colorado. So a little bit about Lucas. He spent the last 8 years working at the state, federal, and local level of politics. And most recently, he was an in-house lobbyist for the Colorado Apartment Association, which advocates on behalf of apartment owners, managers, and developers in Colorado. So recently, Lucas transitioned out of lobbying to pursue a full-time career in investing in multifamily apartments and creating a passive cash flow stream for him and his family. So Lucas, welcome to the show. Thank you.
Thanks. I appreciate the opportunity to be back again, this time talking about something I know a little bit more about. So this is a topic that I feel pretty passionate about. This is something that is sort of a melding of my two worlds, so to say. I've spent my professional career, as you said, probably closer to 10 years when you count in, you know, campaigning or working as at the polls as a kid. So this is an important topic to meld into real estate investing, which is another one of my worlds. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this and to create value for folks that are real estate investing but are looking for another avenue to expand their underwriting. So this is titled How to Leverage Political Involvement to Protect Your Investment. And this is something that I've thought about for a long time and rarely see is folks that are involved in real estate investing. They understand the chasm between what they do and the political involvement. They know that politics is involved with what they do, but they don't understand necessarily how to execute a strategy to protect their investment. They don't see the connection there. So why don't we just start by recognizing a little bit about what I did. I am a state registered lobbyist in Colorado. And really all that is just going and filling out forms for the at the Secretary of State's website. So it's not really a formal process, but it does require you to jump through more hoops. And as opposed to being a citizen lobbyist, which is what I hope that a lot of people will be doing after this presentation. So let's start with a real life scenario of sort of how rules and regulations are come about in Colorado and across the country, really, but especially in Colorado. There are, like we all remember Schoolhouse Rock, the how a bill becomes a law. Everybody really remembers
that.
Are you
going to sing the song?
we can if you want, but
take the lead.
No, that's quite all right. But everyone sort of remembers that, but it's changed. And I don't know exactly when it's changed. It's become sort of unelected bureaucrats creating rules and regulations that really have begun to clamp down on a lot of what we do. So let's go through a real life scenario. If you've heard, have you heard of valet trash service?
No.
Or concierge trash service. So what it is, it's an amenity for usually bigger multifamily properties. And it, essentially it's trash service. So tenants have to put out their trash outside their door in usually a bin, sometimes a mat, and they just set it outside their door. Once or twice a week, someone will come and pick up their trash.
So this is opposed to them walking down the hallway and putting in the trash chute.
Well, a lot of new multifamily buildings aren't built with trash chutes. They're built with this service in mind. So they have a dumpster on site. So literally all this company does is they pick up trash and then they carry it to the dumpster that's on site. Now, it seems like a huge luxury, but then you think about the single mother who doesn't have to decide whether to leave her kid in the house while she goes and runs the trash to the bin, or a senior citizen who physically can't walk the distance to the dumpster to throw their trash over it, or, you know, the young woman who doesn't feel comfortable walking in a dark parking garage to the dumpster. So this service was created, and it's a fantastic amenity for buildings because it's a way to generate ancillary income. Usually it's around $20 to, well, sometimes $15 to $30 a month for this service. And it's great because people put trash outside their door anyway, and it leaks all over and damages carpet, and it's a big hassle. So what this service does is it eliminates a lot of problems and creates income for multifamily properties. Something that the owners probably never saw when they created this was the ability to be regulated, or the possibility of being regulated. Enter West Metro Fire Rescue, and I'll be careful to say this without offending anyone, but essentially the fire department is there to protect you, but they're also there. They have a wing called the Fire Prevention Wing, and this is a service that they provide to their constituency to prevent fires, hopefully. They were on site doing an inspection, an annual fire inspection, and saw these trash cans out, and they questioned the property owner, "What is this? We don't like this. You know, there's some hazards here." So they said it created a danger to the public safety through internalizing combustibles and reducing the minimum clear egress. So essentially saying things could start on fire in those trash cans, and if there was a fire, people couldn't safely exit. Now, there's never been a case of, to my knowledge, there's never been a case of a fire resulting from these trash cans. There's never been an issue of people tripping over them as they're leaving, but that's not the job of the Fire Prevention Bureau. They're to prevent fires. And so that was a clear indication that they were planning on doing something. And so the next came basically a full moratorium on the service in West Metro, saying you can't operate this type of service. It violates the fire code, their interpretation of the fire code, not ours, which we got in, I say we, part of the Colorado Apartment Association got involved on behalf of one of our members. That member was trying to sell a building during that, and they had that situation come up during the due diligence period. So it was a 208-unit building generating about $72,000 from this line item, and overnight it went from a 4.8 cap down to a 3.5 cap overnight from an unelected bureaucrat making this decision. So this was a clear, in my mind, violation of property rights to do this, but it made it very difficult on the seller because now they're going to have to take a massive hit or lose a lot of money. And it really upset the buyer because now they can't count on this income in the future. And it upset the residents, frankly, because they were used to putting their trash out and not having to walk. And now, because of this, they had to stop that. So what this highlights is really two things. And it's one is regulators don't understand our business. They don't understand how their decisions affect us down the road. And then the second is some things are really difficult to see coming, especially in real estate investing. This is a tricky situation that couldn't really have been prevented other than staying really involved with the political process, understanding how these things work. Fire districts are their own little fiefdom. They're not elected. There's no real appeals process. Their appeals process goes to a bunch of other firefighters. So it's not really an appeals process. So being involved politically is a big deal. Those owners are going to lose a lot of money probably from this. And these folks that regulate don't really understand this. So there's a lot of misconceptions about politics, I think, from folks that aren't really involved in politics. And let's talk about some of those because I think they are misconceptions and they're not realities. And one of them, and probably the biggest one, is you don't need to be in politics to talk to elected officials. I think a lot of the folks that I talk to want to stay away from it. They say, "No, I don't really know what I'm talking about when it comes to politics. I don't speak their language. I don't stay up on current events like this." And nor should you have to. You have your own businesses. You need to be involved with that. But that's a total misconception. Elected officials, they don't want to talk about politics with you. They want to talk about your business. They want to hear from you. And it's more self-serving than you would think. It's not this romantic idea that they really care about what you think, but they do care about getting reelected. And that's a big deal to them. And so part of what I do is, as a lobbyist, is I get polling on how we can do our job better, on how we can be more effective. one of those polls said 83% of member, and this is at the federal level, but 83% of the members of Congress ranked hearing from my constituents as the most important factor when evaluating policy. So, and this was a blind study. This was anonymous. They had no reason to sort of posture in this. They truly do believe that hearing from their constituents will get them reelected, which is important to them. So they do want to hear from you. They do want to hear about your business. They want to hear how things affect you, and in hopes that you will be their rallying cry as to why they will be reelected. And that's my own hypothesis as to it, but I think it's pretty accurate. So the misconception that they don't care about what you have to say is false. And another misconception is that their hands are tied. There's a political process in play, and once things are in motion, there's nothing you can do. There's no real action you can take to have a big difference. That's a huge misconception. And you only have to look as far as on the very far right, you have the Tea Party. That was a grassroots effort that was started by a couple people that really ginned up support and changed the entire political course for at least 3 or 4 years. And then on the left, you have the 99%. We are the 99%. It's a couple of people that really had a groundswell effect on politics, and it changed the process. Their hands are not tied in these situations, and all they need to have is motivation to want to change, and you create that. So it's a misconception that you have to take things as they are. And one of the biggest ones, and you hear it all the time, but you hear the wrong narrative too, is that one, you know, my vote doesn't count, or my voice as a person doesn't count. And I think that's probably half right, being as your vote doesn't necessarily count. You can count on one hand all elections that have ever been professionally monitored. Probably, my guess is 3, 4, 5 have ever been decided by one vote. Maybe. But there's a big difference there between one person and one vote. One person is huge. It's your network. One vote is one vote. Look at Bill Gates or Jeff Bezos. Their networks are massive, but their vote counts just the same as mine. So your effect on politics, your voice in politics, can be so much bigger than the one vote that you carry into the polling booth. So, you know, why does your network matter so much? This is going to be a general theme of this talk, is creating your network and playing on that. There's some election math that can highlight this for you. And we'll just take the city of Denver because I know the numbers. I don't necessarily know other municipalities off the top of my head. But in Colorado, Denver is probably the highest voter turnout, if I had to guess. And they have a population of around 750,000 people, right? They have an active voter base in the previous election, an active voter base of around 330,000. That's a pretty standard national rule of thumb, is about half of your population is your active voter base. And those are the people that are actively voting in elections on a consistent basis. So in the last municipal election, only 94,000 people voted for the mayor. That's 1/7 of the population deciding the leadership for the city. And if you take this even further, there's 13 members of the Denver City Council. The average voter turnout was around 6,000 vote for across the board. The lowest was 3,235. 3,200 votes was the lowest amount that a council member got and got elected. So if you apply some rules of thumb, that roughly 25 to 30% of that vote will always occur. So when you look at polling, 30% on the far right, 30% on the far left will always vote for someone. They see a D next to their name or an R next to their name, they're going to vote for that person across the board. It doesn't matter the policies. So 30% of 3,235 is 2,264. So a little over 2,200 people essentially were the deciding factors, the undecided votes that got this city councilman elected. So that's shocking that a little more than the Coors Field rock pile can get somebody elected. So why does your network matter so much? All of us in this room have a combined network of well over 2,200 people. So we only have 4 votes in this room, but we have a network that can reach a lot of people. And that's what's so critical with protecting your real estate investment is we all have a network of folks that aren't necessarily politically involved. And so they're more susceptible to hearing what the media tells them, what the other side tells them, and just general other people who are involved in their network will tell them. So part of in leveraging political involvement to protect your real estate is becoming more active within your own network of citing things that you are seeing that's wrong, promoting policies you think are great, basically being a source of political information to those folks that aren't necessarily involved. So you really have to look inside and see how big is your network and how can you utilize that better. So let's talk about becoming a citizen lobbyist because that's pretty critical. So what does a lobbyist do? It's almost become a pejorative lately. Is being a lobbyist is almost as bad as being a landlord. And so I'd like to say that I'm a mutually hated person because I'm a landlord and a lobbyist. So
two negatives make a positive, right?
Yeah, maybe. I know that's a good point. So lobbyist is a pejorative. Everybody knows that they should hate lobbyists. They know that they're bad people, but they don't necessarily realize that they probably are lobbyists themselves. If you've ever called your congressman, if you've ever written a letter to your congressman, if you've ever tried to convince someone to vote your way, you are a lobbyist. And there's good lobbyists and there's bad lobbyists, just like in every profession. And what matters to you is important. And so you want to lobby for that. But when someone is being paid for that, apparently that takes on a different tone. And there are bad lobbyists. That's certainly true. And in fact, when I first took my job being a lobbyist, my mom was calling me and complaining about some sort of healthcare issue. This was a while ago. And she said, you know, if it wasn't for the damn lobbyists and all their dark money and all this, and it wouldn't be a problem. And so I had to gently remind her that, you know, that's my job now. I am a lobbyist. I do hand out checks for a living and I try and convince people to vote my way. And she said, oh, no, not you, not you. And that's the kind of thinking that you have. You know, my viewpoint is correct and I don't fall into that category. Whereas every other person who hires a professional lobbyist who is a lobbyyist is thinking the same thing. You know, their opinion is correct and they're going to pay someone to be there for you and make sure other people hear it. So lobbying is nothing more than educating elected officials. That's what I like to call it. They don't understand everything we do. So we educate them on that in hopes that they will see that our opinion or our viewpoint is better and they'll listen to us. So lately, there's been a shift from, you know, one-on-one behind closed doors lobbying to being played out in a public relations field, basically. And you have to look no further than, you know, oil and gas in Colorado. It's a huge deal and it's played out at the state level very rarely. I don't know if there was any bills this legislative session that dealt with that. Probably there was. On the local level, in a couple different municipalities, they're addressing it, but pretty rarely. But you hear about it hourly on the radio. You hear ads all the time from the Colorado Oil and Gas Association, from folks that are anti-fracking. This is being played out in a proxy war on the air, on TV, and on the radio. So it's been a shift from lobbying elected officials to lobbying you and me, individual citizens, to call our congressman. How many times do you hear that during the political season? Call Mike Kaufman and tell him what you think about this. And some of that is, you know, campaign finance reasons for saying that particular wording. But others, it's if you can create a groundswell of support for your candidate or your issue, elected officials will follow that. And so, and this is exacerbated by a 24-hour news cycle. Everyone's got a podium and a soapbox and their cell phone. And what that creates is a situation where elected officials have never really been easier to reach. A lot of our elected officials will give you their cell phone information. They'll give you their email and they expect you to talk to them. So it's actually doesn't take a whole lot to become a lobbyist and to become a citizen lobbyist and be more involved. So there's a very old cliche that I've heard probably 1,000 times in the lobbying world. And it's, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And so it's cliche, but it's really true. politicians aren't elected because they're the smartest, most brilliant individuals. They're elected because they're really good at convincing people that they have the right ideas. They're really good at telling people how they're going to fix their problems. And I like to say that they don't know your business, but they won't mind their own. And so that's not going to stop them from regulating you. That's not going to stop them from taxing you. That's not going to stop them from being intimately involved in you and your business. And so if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. You need to be involved. You need to be intimately aware of what they're planning to do. I talked about grassroots advocacy. It's surging in popularity, and investors need to be more involved in this. There are countless stories of how landlords are taking advantage of folks, but there's no stories out there. There's no narrative that landlords are just housing providers. We're providing a product that people need, and they're getting at a fair price right now. And there's no narrative that, hey, this is my retirement plan, or this is my kid's inheritance. It's a narrative of landlords are greedy. And so if you're an elected official and you know no different, you're going to believe that. So investors, we need to tell the other side of the story. So what is the other side of the story? We hear my job has been increasingly difficult due to a lot of tenants' rights organizations creating a narrative that paints landlords as evil. They paint developers as these folks that are raping the ground and really taking advantage of every situation just to make a few bucks. And we all know, if you're listening to this, you probably don't agree with that narrative, but if you're an elected official who knows no different, you're going to believe it. And so we as investors just need to be more involved in telling the real story. So renters' rights is a pretty big issue nationwide, but especially in Colorado, it's become very difficult for people to read the newspaper without hearing something about affordable housing or tenants' rights. And so we have to ask ourselves, what are we willing to give up? And when I tell people what I do, their first indication is, oh, you know, there's rent control. What else is there? You can't be that busy, because how many issues could there possibly be with apartment investors? And a lot of people don't know. So, you know, most people think that rent control is the only issue. There's just cause evictions. There's capping application fees. There's impact fees on new development, mandating people take Section 8. There's changes to warranty of habitability laws. They're sealing eviction records, so you can't look at whether someone's been evicted, sealing criminal background checks. So there's all these things that really will not kill an investor on their own. They're expensive. They're very time-consuming to your business. They create a lot of administrative burden, but they're not going to kill you. But together, it's the straws that broke the investor's back. And there comes a time when you have to look at, you know, how many of us are underwriting deals based on rents being the same in 5 years, or rent growth being where it's at, or when you're flipping houses, is the market going to be there in 5 years? You got to look at all those things to eliminate variables. And my argument is that the political environment is itself a variable. You need to be involved with it. You need to be underwriting as though it could be drastically different in 5 years. So there's a lot of anxiety about rent control. And rent control, I don't mean to lighten that. It is a very serious issue. Price stabilization, rental caps, whatever you want to call it, it's rent control, and it's going to devastate businesses. You see it in markets that have it or have had it for a long time. A lot of this has played out. Rarely will you find an issue where 94% of economists agree that a cap on rents is harmful to the economy. That's huge. You have 94%. You can't get 94% of anyone to agree on anything. So that's a huge thing. And yet it doesn't stop people from pushing it. So, and I do get the question, do you think rent control is coming to Denver, pretty regularly? So, and I don't see rent control coming to Denver in the next 5 years, with one very large caveat being the election coming up. I think in Colorado, we have the Senate controlled by Republicans by one vote. And that's a backstop right now to a lot of harmful policies. And this isn't really a partisan issue, whether you're Republican or Democrat. There's Republicans pushing anti-growth measures. There's Republicans pushing harmful landlord-tenant laws. But you have to be a realist when you look at this stuff, that a lot of this harmful policy is coming from Democrats. And so having one party controlling that, being Democrats, is a scary issue for a lot of people, but especially landlords. And I don't know if it would be such a big deal if we were in a less healthy economy for rental properties, but hearing that rental rates are at all-time high, rents are skyrocketing, landlords are taking advantage of low-income folks, it's not hard to see the writing on the wall. So I think there's a lesson to be had there, and it's you need to be involved and you need to be counting on this, and at the very least, thinking about it in the back of your mind if you buy a property. So why should we all care? I feel like I've laid out the argument well, but really it's a daunting task to care about politics. It's for someone who doesn't care about or follow politics at all, figuring out a way to be involved is tough. And so talking about political cronyism, and this is something that is not going to make me very popular, but in my mind, it is increasingly the case that elected officials are picking winners and losers in our economy. It's not grit. It's not hard work. It's not determination. It's not, you know, elbow grease. When you're building your business, it is, in my mind, cronyism. We have elected officials that are picking winners and losers. Now, that's not to say you can't start a successful business, become successful, and make money for yourself, but there is a cap on things. There are agendas to be had, and you have to pay attention to that. There's some great examples of this, and you have to look no further than the banks after the financial crisis. Too big to fail, right? And Amazon's HQ2 or headquarters, I've never seen so many cities bowing down to a corporation offering all these things. And that's not a value judgment on Amazon. I don't really have a preference on it, but it's interesting to see that the government is really trying to pick a winner in this case. And so, and you have other examples like the taxi cab union in Austin when Uber came in, and it was a huge threat to these folks. They got it, frankly, outlawed to operate an Uber. And I don't know if that's still the case, but it's an interesting situation where you have folks that are elected by a very narrow margin, as I showed you, having wielding wildly powerful pens, essentially. So, you know, all of that is, yes, it's a tragedy of economic freedom, but none of us are really freedom fighters. We're not, it's very difficult for us to take on that huge fight. It's a daunting task. We just want to put food in our bellies and feed our families. How can we use this to our advantage? Well, there are some tangible takeaways that we can do to make sure that we're involved in the process and we're at the table and we're not on the cutting block. And it's very simple to do. It's very simple to, and it doesn't take a lot of time to be involved. So one of the biggest things you can do is set up Google Alerts. This is something that if you don't know about Google Alerts, you should. It's basically a scrubbing tool for finding keywords based in articles across the internet. So you can set up keywords like Denver landlords or rent control in Denver or any number of things that you can think of that might come across in a news story or a blog post, and set up a Google Alert for that and stay up to date on that. I hear a lot from folks that are curious. They want to be involved, but they don't know how. And that's one of the biggest ways you could do that. The Colorado General Assembly website, and we just finished our legislative session here in Colorado, but next January you can set up keyword alerts at the legislature so that any bill that comes out that has the word landlord or landlord-tenant laws or anything like that, you will be sent a notification about that. And when you are sent a notification, that's the next step that you need to be critical and take action. Go down and testify, or write a letter or email your elected officials. It's not that difficult. They need to hear from folks that have a vested interest in this. A lot of people don't understand that when we know for a fact that a bill is going to make it out of, say, the House, we know for a fact that it's a partisan vote, it's going to be a party line vote, it's going to pass. Why are you going down there and fighting it? It seems like a waste of time. Well, and it is, in effect, for sure going to happen. But what happens is we need to, and we call it throwing blood on it, going down there and voicing our concern so that it gives people who are on our side, who support our viewpoints, give them a reason to vote against this. If they don't have a reason, if they don't have someone that they can point to saying, I agree with him, I'm going to vote against this, even if they disagree with it, they're going to feel compelled to join the crowd and support it. So it's important to help your political friends out that are elected officials by going down there and voicing your viewpoint on a bill. So that's critical. Take action, go down, testify, write a letter, but also invest $200. That's all it really takes for you to be impactful or for an elected official to hear your voice. Now, I throw around checks that are maxing out. Generally, that's around $4,800 in Colorado, but it doesn't take that much money. If you take $50 and write a check to your local city councilman and go and ask to sit down with them, say 20 minutes, buy a cup of coffee and give you some money, they're going to sit down with you because that money is important to them. Think of it from their point of view, 20 minutes and I just made 50 bucks. That's over $100 an hour. So they'll sit down with you and that's when you go and you lay out what you do for a living and why it helps them. And then you say, I want to be your best friend. If you ever have an issue that involves landlord-tenant law or involves commercial brokerage or anything like that, I want to be your first call.
Okay, let's do a little role play.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm city council person and you're somebody with $50 who wants to talk to me.
Yeah.
How do you approach me?
How do I approach you? So I say, you know, councilman, I mean, it depends if you're elected or if you're running for office.
Say elected. Say
if you're elected, it's a little harder, but not quite as hard. Just say, you know, councilman, I saw what you did, or I saw your op-ed, I saw your vote. I'd like to sit down with you and talk to you a little bit. I have a contribution for you, but I'd really like to hand it to you in person and discuss why that's such a big, because, you know, they're smart people. They're going to direct you to their website all day. Say, if you have a contribution, go pay online. But I've never made a political contribution online. I always deliver it in person because what's critical, and this gets to what I was going to talk about, is you need to look that person in the eye. They need to put a face to a real estate investor. And that's critical because if they're going to be regulating you, you want them to remember your face when they're taking that vote. And the $50 is really, it's not going to make or break their campaign, but it is symbolic that you care, you're invested in their success, and you want to make a big difference. So $50 to them, $150 to your house rep or your senator, probably your house rep would be easier, but those are the things that can go a long way in making sure they remember you and they put a face to your name. And once isn't going to cut it. You need to continue to reach out to them, shoot them an email, take a picture with them, post it on Facebook, you know, be in their face. And whether you like them or not, they're going to remember you and they're going to realize that it's not going to be such an easy sell if they want to just go to a neighborhood group and gin up support for whatever they're proposing and just have it fly through council. They've got to go past you. So, and this is really leads to, you know, the biggest part of this whole thing is to broadcast your involvement. I talked about taking a picture. Take a picture with him when in your meeting, take a picture with her when you're having coffee and you post it. Or you, if you're a broker, you create a newsletter to your investors, to your buyers, to your owners, and you broadcast that out and become the authority on these political issues to your network. And that creates a lot of appreciation from an investor side. If you're a broker, you're creating value to them in more than one way, and they see it from their own mind. I'm talking about owners. They see it that my broker has my back, or this investor, he really knows what he's talking about. I'm going to believe him, even though I don't really know a lot about the issue. And you never know, when they get their ballot and they're filling it out, be like, oh, that's that thing Chris was talking about. I don't really remember what he was saying. I don't really understand it. But, you know, he talks about it a lot. He probably knows what he's talking about. So I'm going to vote for it. That's the kind of thing where I was talking about earlier, that your voice is so much bigger than your one vote. So that's really the tangible takeaways from this. Become informed by setting up alerts. Invest a little bit of money in talking with your congressman or your councilman or whoever, and then broadcast that involvement and continue to do so on a regular basis. And so just wrapping it up, you know, we talk a lot about, as investors, and we talk a lot about eliminating variables. We lose money on variables we can't see. And so why ignore this one very large variable that has a profound impact on all of our lives when you can make a very small effort to become more involved and it's going to pay off in a big way? So I have a funny quote that I found, and it's, you know, forget T-bills, investing in policymakers is the next, is the big place to win. So, and actually a funny story that I was doing some research about this and found an article called Lobbying Index Beats the Market. And what these guys did, these Wall Street analysts, they created an index of like the S&P or the Nikkei, whatever, and they created an index of companies that invested the most amount of dollars in lobbying. And what they found was they got, and this was from 2009 to, the article was written in April of 2018. And what they found was it averaged 14.4% annual return. And that beat the S&P, which was posting at 9.5%. So the hypothesis in this article was that these folks that are investing money in lobbying are more than making their return, and they're investing big dollars in it too. So, and that's not to say you have to spend a lot of money. Like I said, $200 will more than do it, and you just have to do a little bit more effort than what you're currently doing. So with that, I'm happy to answer more questions or talk about other issues too.
Well, I guess I've got a question. Has there been a change over the years where either it's harder to get your congressman or your city council person today than it was, say, 10 or 15 or 20 years ago?
Yeah, I do think so, just because, and I did say it's easier than ever to talk, to communicate with your congressman. It's not easier to get them to sit down. You know, more and more, they have their phone number out there, they have their email out there, they're getting hit up a lot more. That's why I said, come with a check in your hand. That's a big part. You know, they like making money. Money, whether you like it or not, money is a huge part of politics. And it's something that you really can't ignore if you're taking this seriously. So you should have no problem sitting down with your congressman. If you say, I'm so-and-so, this is what I do for a living, here's how I want to create value for you. By the way, I also have a contribution. I'd like to deliver it in person. Can I come to your office with a cup of coffee? I mean, they would be so stupid not to do that. Because like I said, they care what their constituents think, but only because they want to get reelected.
So I have a question on more of a local level. Let's assume that you are doing business in, say, District 1 of the council person for the city of Denver.
Okay.
And that happens to be Rafael Espinosa.
Right.
And if you want to know what's going on in that particular district, what he is in favor of, what his opinions are, is that something that you would recommend that you do, in the sense of, can I sit down with you, Rafael, and find out what your thinking is, what you would like to see happen in these various neighborhoods?
I suspect that, well, I know for a fact all the Denver City Council members have their own weekly newsletter. They all broadcast what their legislative priorities are. I don't know in that particular case what, if he has some sort of grand plan that he wants to do, but if it's a big legislative priority to him, and elected officials campaign on thousands of issues, they have to be an expert, or so they say, on many issues, from healthcare to real estate to taxes to any number of things. But whether it's a legislative priority for them, everyone has their different priority. For some, it's healthcare. For some, it's education. For some, it's revitalizing our neighborhoods. All these things that are different to each and every one of them. For Rafael, I don't know what his legislative priorities are, whether it's income inequality. I know that's a big issue for him. But whether he has this grand neighborhood plan is another thing. But my suggestion to you would be, get on his newsletter, see what he's writing about. And if it has anything to do with real estate or neighborhood planning, or if he's interacting with groups that deal with that, like there's a lot of neighborhood groups that are very active in these local city council races, but just call him. You know, these city council members are, and Denver's a little harder. They think they're a lot more important than they really are, but they will generally contact you somehow, whether it's through email, whether you can go to a community neighborhood meeting. They have those fairly regularly, but he will, in my mind, he would communicate with you.
So. Okay.
I don't know if I'm more depressed than I was an hour ago or.
Well, that's why I said you're going to hate me after this because.
No, I don't hate you. I'm just.
No, I think that this is the way the world is. Yeah. And the reality is, if you are not going to change it by sitting here and moaning and groaning about it, you're going to change it by being a part of the system rather than just being outside the system and doing nothing.
It's only $50, so, you know.
Well, and like I said, we're not freedom fighters here. It would be great if we could live in this world of ideals where we say, no more money in politics. You get elected on your ideas. But that's just not the case, and that's not the world we live in right now. And if you're really serious about protecting your investment, you're going to recognize that there are things that might make you uncomfortable, but that might need to be done. Getting involved in politics might be one of them. And this is a pretty easy foray into it. And it depends on how big your business is. If it makes sense, if you're doing a massive redevelopment, I think it really does make sense to hire a third-party lobbyist to escort you through this zoning issues or local city councils. That takes a lot of finesse.
Can we talk about that a little bit?
Like, yeah.
You know, so $50 for a congressman or city council. Great. What are we looking at for a lobbyist?
Depends what you're trying to do. If it's a project-based fee or if it's a monthly retainer, if you're looking at a monthly retainer for a local lobbyist, it's probably somewhere around $40,000 a year. If you're looking for a state lobbyist, somewhere around $80,000 a year. For projects, I don't know. I've never done one, but I can recommend a good firm if you want it.
And so, for example, if you have something you're trying to get across to your reps, you might go to a professional lobbyist, pay the lobbyist to open the doors for you.
You could.
That's how the world works.
You could. In fact, that would probably be the most efficient. And this is what we're talking about. We want an ROI on this. We don't want to waste a lot of our time becoming political experts when it's not making us money. That's why I put these very easy, tangible takeaways to be more involved. I think that's a good mixture of being involved without wasting your time. Now, if you're going through this process and you want to massively increase your presence at the state capitol, it totally makes sense to hire a lobbyist to open those doors for you. As you said, they do care about what lobbyists say, and they do have access. But don't forget what I said earlier, 83% of members of Congress, and I do believe this, they want to hear from constituents too, because when I go up and testify for a bill as a lobbyist, they don't really care what I have to say. They know what I'm going to say before I'm up there. But if you're a constituent and if you're lining up constituents out the door, showing the impact on why this is the way it is, they're going to listen to that a lot more. And that's why these tenants' rights groups and these advocacy groups are so popular, is because they line up people out the door when there's public testimony. And whether it's true or not, they paint landlords as bad people, and they're very successful at it. So
what this talk has taught me is, or my take, one of my takeaways is that if you are organized, persistent, and purposeful, then you can have an impact significantly beyond your one vote. Yeah. And in fact, you can have a significant, if you can rally your friends and neighbors and troops and business, concurrent business interests, then you can have a significant impact.
Yeah. And I talk to a lot of investors who, particularly on the much larger multifamily scale, that say, I can't risk political affiliation for my business. I don't want to piss anybody off on one side of the aisle or another. And my retort to them is, no one's throwing up their arms and having these knockdown fights at Thanksgiving based on, you know, developer impact fees or capping application fees. It's like, it's the big bellwether issues, like, you know, social issues or guns or anything that draws people on one side of the issue or another. There is room in the middle for relevant discussions on issues that pertain to a lot of us. You're not going to upset a huge amount of your network if you're talking about why this particular legislation is going to be harmful for residents in your building or harmful for your clients as a broker. In fact, if you're a broker pushing these out to your owners, they're going to feel that you have their back. You're investing in this with them. So just a little bit of effort, create yourself as an authority for those issues, and you're not going to lose a lot of people, or I would hope you're not going to lose a lot of people because you're involved in politics. But
so, I mean, what's the response to, because, you know, we're talking at the local level, $50 checks, $200 contribution checks. Well, I'm busy. The next investor will do that. I mean, there's that very real thing of, the next guy will do it.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have any words of wisdom for that? Because, I mean, I used to write letters to my congressman, and now I just, I mean, that's my, I guess I'm cynical now, but
yeah,
I
no,
see the same thing happening.
That's fueled, that cynicism is fueled by the idea that you don't have an impact. And you have to believe, and it's hard to believe without actually seeing it for yourself, but I've seen bills that were assigned to the kill committee. So they call it at the state house. It's a committee where bills essentially go to get postponed indefinitely. I've seen bills that were dead on arrival get turned around by 180 simply because of the testimony that was involved. And these aren't small issues. There was a gun bill not too long ago that was supposed to be killed that wasn't. And that demonstrates that these folks that want to be involved, that don't see value in calling their congressman or writing them, they should really take a second look at this, because they do believe that it's out of their hands. And that's one of those misconceptions I was talking about, that it's already going to happen. They're going to do whatever they want to do anyway. And the next guy down the road, they're not going to do it. I mean, I talk to a lot of investors, and I try and get them to, part of my job is fundraising. And I say, look, you need to pony up. This is going to hurt you a hell of a lot more than it's going to hurt me. You need to write the check. And they say, well, my contribution's not going to matter, or, you know, it's going to happen either way, or you're going to do it anyway. I'm not going to invest in it. And they might not come out and say it, but they're saying it with their non-participation, that you're going to do it anyway. I'm going to just ride on your coattails. And we saved the multifamily industry in Colorado here over $118 million this legislative session by fighting these crappy bills that came up. Now, we would have done that whether we got that contribution or not. And that's one of the unfortunate circumstances of what we do, is we're not going to let off the gas pedal because we're not getting enough participation, because that'd be detrimental. But we could do so much more with greater participation, and particularly at the grassroots level.
And that requires education, because I think that most people don't, not unlike Chris, feel that, you know, they're powerless.
Right.
And I have been at city, not city council, but neighborhood meetings where if 40 or 50 people show up and they're against a project,
a project doesn't go forward.
Well, it either goes, it may not be killed entirely, but the time frame and the damage control you have to do is significant.
Yeah, I was sitting in on a planning board meeting, and I had nothing to do with this project, but I was sitting in on a planning board meeting about a development off of Colorado Boulevard, right off of Colorado Boulevard. And this was a while ago, last year, but it had been a situation where the planning board deferred it for a full year to meet with these neighborhood groups to come up with a situation to where it wouldn't slow down traffic off of Colorado Boulevard while you were turning into it, but it also wouldn't create unnecessary traffic in the neighborhood. Now, talk about being between a rock and a hard place for a developer. Not only can you not please a neighborhood group by traffic, you know, traffic's one of those issues that will, no matter what your party is, you hate traffic. The developer sitting there saying, how do I please this neighborhood group, but also not piss off the city about traffic? And all the while, you're holding costs for a whole year. Like, that's a big chunk that I would suspect that they didn't underwrite that to that level. And developers are very good at underwriting political stalling, but a full year just for that one particular issue was a big deal. So yeah, a little bit of education. And I always encourage developers, if you're going into a new development, go ahead and meet with those neighborhood groups early, because you're not going to get away with not doing it. You might as well put in the park or put in the extra trees that they want and get their support early on. And it goes the same way with landlords. You know, nothing makes a neighborhood more upset than traffic and police activity. So if you could talk with your police, create a safe housing program, most big cities have one, put in good cameras for the police so they can catch the criminals that are doing things. Don't be the slumlord house on the block, because you are attracting new regulations. You're attracting these new laws that hurt everyone. So yeah, just a little bit of education goes a long way.
I went to a neighborhood meeting, and there was one giant takeaway that I took away from this one meeting. And it was, it really is important to make the neighbors aware of what you're doing. Now, they may not necessarily agree with it, but you can reduce the power of their opposition if you've taken the time to at least acknowledge their potential opposition.
Yeah. I mean, if you're flipping houses, it's courteous to talk to the neighbors that you're going to have dumpsters and folks out in front of the building. If you're buying a rental house, talk to the neighbors and say, hey, this is a rental now. Here's my personal phone number. Call me if something bad happens. Or if you're buying a big house and scraping it and putting a new development in, let the neighbors know. And you're right, they're probably not going to be very happy, but at least they have your phone call so that they vent to you, hopefully, as opposed to venting to a city council member. The biggest thing we want to do is cut off the flow or the pipeline from a pissed off constituent and their elected official who doesn't know any better that's going to write a new law. That's why we get involved with this stuff. So
great. Well, Lucas, I mean, what's the best way people can get a hold of you? I mean, do you even want people reaching out to you for lobbying questions?
Yeah, no. And this is part of why I want to be a part of this. It is, you know, it's a very daunting task. A lot of people don't know about this and they're embarrassed to ask questions. They're embarrassed to say, I don't know this. I'm an impartial person. I don't care whether you know something or not. I just want to see more support. So if you have a question on how this process works, and I talked about Schoolhouse Rock, it's so different from that now. Nobody knows what a planning board meeting goes like or what a local neighborhood group is thinking. So talk to me. I've got some experience, not all of it. I don't know everything, but I'm willing to help you navigate it. And I probably know how you can figure it out. So, you know, you can reach out to me. My email is Lucas, L-U-C-A-S at BANNOCK capital.com, BannettCapital.com. Shoot me an email and ask me your question, or if you want help, if you want recommendations on who you should hire, or if you want to just talk more, shoot me an email and we'll set something up. I won't bring a $50 check, but unless you're running for something. And I mean, you talked about being an elected official already, but if you can get to a candidate before they're even elected, that investment goes so much further because. And this is sort of the secret of this, the not so obvious secret, is that the people who are on your planning board or the people who are on your neighborhood group are your next city council member. The next city council member is your next rep. The next rep is your next mayor or whatever. So these people don't stop. I mean,
it's like an early round of funding, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. If you can get on the ground floor, your vote is... That was a huge strategy of what we tried to do is identify these people on who they are and get in early. So it's a fascinating world of lobbying, and there's all kinds of statistics showing what you should be doing and how you should be doing it. But you don't need to know all that. You just need to get a little bit involved. So,
well, Lucas, I learned a lot. Thank you for
for the depressing talk, but
no, but it's reality. I mean, that's the thing. Fantastic. Like that's the best thing. I'd rather have reality than have a pep talk.
Yeah,
so thank you. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely.